I release the need to meet the expectations of others. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capitol, California, with Instant Illumination. I release my need to meet the expectations of others. How often do we live our life for others? And I would say 99% of the time. We have been trained that there's only a certain way that things should be done. We've been trained that we must always do the things that others do. And even the Bible, even Jesus said, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Now, how would you like other people to treat you? Well, that would probably be a very noble thing, a very nice thing. You'd like other people to be respectful of you. You'd like other people to look at you and think that you're a nice person. You'd like other people to recognize that it's a good world we're in, positive world. You'd like other people to realize that all is in divine order. You'd like to realize that your life is a harmonious thing, and that's what you'd like to realize. Now, for you to realize that other people are that, you have to be that way. However you want people to realize you are, that's how you have to be. And if you're not going to be that way, then you're not living up to the principles that are so important in your life. And if you don't do that, then you're letting the rest of the world manipulate and control you. And now, Ellen just allowed the dogs to manipulate her. Ellen knows the rules here at the monastery in preparation for giving our talks, that we make sure that all the dogs are happily put away in areas where they're not going to be disturbed by whatever's going on, and that they'll be quiet during the talk. But Ellen didn't choose to do that. She thought her little baby was learning how to mind and learning how to be good, but she didn't know what a tempter her little baby is.
My baby was there.
And see, now she's not trying to, she's disclaiming her child. She says, that's not my baby. That's not my baby. My baby always does everything right. And that's what mothers should think. That's what mothers should think. But I release my need to meet the expectations of others. Now, the story could be that I said that we have the dogs all under control when we are ready for giving our talk. Because they're all house dogs and they're lots of fun to be with. And they like to chase each other and just be amused and just have a good old time. And so we like that very much. And my rule is that for the talk, the dogs are to be constrained. They are to be relaxed and put under control so that they don't make a lot of nonsense while I'm giving my talk. So I release my need to meet the expectations of others. So you might say that Ellen and Sylvia and Ingeborg would say, that's your expectation. I don't meet that. I don't have to meet the needs of your expectation to keep the dogs under control while you're giving a talk. I don't have to meet the needs of your expectation to have the house in quiet while you're giving a talk. I don't have to meet the needs of your expectation to make sure the telephone doesn't ring while you're giving a talk. I don't have to meet the needs of your expectation to have people come to the door and activities going on while you're giving a talk. I don't have to meet those needs of your expectations. And I would say, that's correct. You don't have to meet those needs. And I don't have to give the talks either. And what would you like? Would you like to meet the needs of the expectations that are necessary for me to give the talk and to have it be properly put onto the internet? Or would you like to have it your own way and have the dogs run rampant and free and get all excited in the middle of these talks and distract our attention and so forth? You see, the opportunity to say to yourself, I release the need to meet the expectations of others, you turn that around. I meet the expectations of myself. Now, what are the expectations of yourself? Are the expectations of yourself that all of your world is in divine order? Are the expectations of yourself that every time you are participating in any activity, you are always doing the proper thing? You are always doing the harmonious thing? You are always doing the good thing? Is that what your expectation is for yourself? Well, if it is, then do so. Do so. And the only way to do so is to actually do it. Now, for months, we put the dogs away in the bedroom and let them relax and sleep while I gave my short talk. Once the talk was done, the 15 minutes, half hour, whatever it was, then the dogs could come out again. And they could run around all they liked because they didn't disturb the recording. However, they did disturb a second listening to the tape. Each time we give one of these talks, we have a requirement that we listen to the talk, and then we listen to it as it is being recorded. Because then we're getting a double direction into the information that we're sharing. Now, the ideas that we present in our talks are not necessarily all monumental. And the ideas are that the talks that we give, they're not all talks that you'd sing at Carnegie Hall. But they are talks with good content. Some talks are just illuminating and rocket bursting and so forth, and they're exciting and dynamic and powerful, and they're saying, let's make a copy of that. We should send that to so-and-so and so-and-so, you know, how you oftentimes do. But you really were in thrilled, infatuated with the talk, and that's nice. And that'd be nice to have all the talks like that. Well, if you stop and think about it, all the talks are like that, because it's only in what you take away from the talk that makes it exciting. If you will hear in the talk your own need and your own fulfillment, then that's what's exciting, and that's what you do. And in some talks, you're not hearing anything that touches your life. You're not hearing anything that makes it exciting for you. You're just hearing things that are things that you've heard before. And then too, like Ellen said, she has heard these things before, but she said she continues to realize that she's hearing them new each time she hears them. Even though she knows mathematics, even though she knows the old school math that she went through, to learn the new school math, the new math, would be quite fascinating. And maybe it might be a change in her whole life and your whole life. Think about it. If you were to learn new math, you say, well, the old math works just fine for me. It does all I want to do. But the new math might open you up to understandings that you had never dreamed about. The new math might open your consciousness to the idea of a realm of adding and subtracting and multiplying and dividing and so forth that you had never realized before. It may have certain little things in it that make it function so much quicker. I mean, what the heck? We went through slide rules. We went through contometers and computers and all these things. Now, maybe the new math is teaching what autistic children do naturally. Autistic children oftentimes are able to add and subtract in their head faster than any contometer can do, faster than anyone on an adding machine can ever plug the figures in, and come up with the right answer without going through all of that. They just go from A to Z. They forget about the rest of the alphabet in between. And the question is, how much is this times that? But they already got the answer. Divided by that, they got the answer. Divided by that, they got the answer. And times that, and square root of this, and wow, ooh, boo. And then you bring in some other higher math features and make it even more difficult. Well, now, you, in your stupidity, say, I can't do that. My gosh, it's bad enough 2 + 2 = 4 without going into that higher stuff. But you see, the thing is, when you learn it as a game, when you learn it as a fun thing, then doing that is not difficult at all. As I had read and told you, when Bill Gates has guests over for an evening, and they're spending the evening in his home, and they're just relaxing and playing games and having coffee or cocktails together, whatever they do, what does he do? He has games of mathematics. He has games of, like, crossword puzzles, but, you know, even more sophisticated than that. He has games that the Mensa people play, which is real high recognition stuff. And so if you are ever invited to go to Bill Gates' house for an evening, be ready to put your mind on fire and really get it in high gear. But really, that's quite a compliment. That's quite a compliment. And you can see the people he associates with are people like himself. People who have very, very active minds, interested minds, intense minds. And to them, it's no big deal. To them, it's no big deal to think of 5 or 6 things at once, as we might think, you know. Of course, you're never thinking more than one thing at a time, but for you to be able to think each thing that you think completely through at the moment you think it, which is quite a trick, that is the genius of it. But you see, I release my need to meet the expectations of others, and I start meeting the expectations of myself. And the expectations of myself is, what is the first thing? God. The first thing is, I am God. That's my first expectation, to be all that I conceive God to be. And of course, everybody else is God too, but it's for me to conceive of myself as God, conceive of myself as the allness, conceive of myself in this wonderful realm of fulfillment, you know? Mm-hmm. And that takes a real challenge. Now, am I ready to do that? Am I willing to do that? Do I care to do that? And the answer is yes. Now, when? And the answer is now. And so, as we play that game, as we walk in that realm, we see beautiful things happen. We see a world of magic open up before us because we had never dreamed of doing things that way. You know? I look at the tree that we planted down here next to the big mobile home years ago. That's by the basketball area there. And the tree is on a great arc. It's a big pine tree that apparently every year was just leaning more and more, and nobody ever pulled it back. Mm. It did?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't stay back?
Mm-mm. It was too late.
It's too late. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you should have started out doing it as a little baby. You know. But today, it has a trunk of maybe about 18, 20 inches, you know, in diameter. And and it's a big old thing leaning over the drive. And it's quite amazing and quite startling. And at my home, at the Hermitage, I have about a dozen trees planted around my yard of pine trees, and whoever put the pine trees in didn't put them in with a level, you know, to make sure that they were upright. So now as I look at them, I see some of them leaning this way and some leaning this way and leaning, and I think to myself, my goodness, I'm glad that he used a level when he put in my fence posts, because obviously he doesn't have the perception to see that without doing it. You know, most of the time when you put a tree in the ground, you get it pretty much straight up. But all these trees are sort of leaning this way and that way because whoever planted them didn't have the perception to see them straight up. Now, they will grow, and they'll grow like that off across the yard, and that's kind of silly. That's not nature's way of doing it, you know. And, of course, now is the time for them to be righted, and I went by a fence pole up on the North 40, and as I walked by it, I noticed it was leaning, and it was part of a fence that was put in by a fellow, and as he put it in, the fence that came across the top of the hill fell down everywhere, and so we took it down. Now this fence across a straight level area is starting to fall down, because instead of putting the concrete in the hole and then putting the pipe in the concrete in the hole, he put the pipe in the hole and then he put the concrete around it where it didn't have an opportunity to go down, and so the concrete's mostly on top of the ground. So a good wind comes along and it blows the fence over. And so I'm just going to take down that portion of fence because it doesn't really do any good there anyhow. So, you see, I release my need to meet the expectations of others. Others may expect me to leave that fence up because it's there, because we had, so to speak, paid to have it put up. And there's another point. There's another point. We had this man do some work for us, and he didn't quite do it correctly. And so we told him that it had to be done over and that we were going to have it done. And he said, no, I'll take care of it. I'll do it. He said, you don't have to pay me anything for doing it, like, over. I will do it. And so we got nothing for nothing. We didn't pay him for doing it, and it wasn't done adequately. Why is this that we do things like that? We should work to our own expectations and not the expectations of others. He should have done that job to his highest expectation, because he does know how to do it. He does know how to do all these things correctly, but those things he did not do correctly, which was not a compliment to him. And we want to be real careful about that. We don't need to live up to the expectations of others, but we surely want to live up to the expectations and more of who we are. This is what our life's all about, and this is where we're going, and this is what you and I think about every moment of our life, living up to the expectations of others. And to what benefit? Live up to the expectations of ourselves, and we will be the finest, most desirable, most fantastic, most wonderful beings on the face of the earth. I love you. I love you.
I love you.